And I'm proud to be an American where at least I know I'm free. That's a famous line from the Lee Greenwood song. But in contrast to that, there are tens of millions of victims of communism just in the 20th century alone. People killed by their own government. And yet, if you went to public schools in America and universities in America today, or you just watched the mainstream American media, you would not know about all these victims of communism. Marxism is so often repackaged and resold to many Americans these days, and in fact, some polls show many Americans, especially young ones, almost would prefer to live under socialism in one sort or another. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Dr. Paul Kanger is our guest. He is a best-selling author. He's a professor of history and political science at Grove City College, and many of his books touch on the whole subject of communism and the threat of communism. Dr. Kanger, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Jerry, it's always good to be with you. Thanks.
Sure. You know, during the 1950s, there was always an understanding in America. In fact, sometimes the threat may have been overstated by somebody like Senator McCarthy, but there was the understanding that the communists wanted to take over the world. Today, it's almost as if the communists are doing a great job at our American universities, taking over at least the schools and the minds of so many millions of Americans today.
Well, so what you have today, and really it's something that we've had for a long time, Jerry. In fact, you know, the late, great Richard Pipes, who was the Harvard professor of Russian history and Sovietology for all those years, he used to say this: what you often have in the academy and with a lot of academics, it's not even necessarily pro-communism, but it's like an anti-anti-communism, where they oppose the anti-communists, right? You know, the people who are vocally anti-communists, they frame as, you know, Joe McCarthy's, you know, rough around the red edges, you know, little Neanderthal, right? The more sophisticated person doesn't condemn communism, right? But tries to see the positives in it. And you know, you've had this among the left for a long time. And so a lot of times in the academy, we have academia, even high schools, the young people simply aren't learning about the dangers of communism. They're not learning about the horrors of communism, and they're not even learning about the basics of communism, which is why they end up oftentimes sympathetic to it, or to ideas like socialism or democratic socialism. It's not so much what they're being taught, but what they're not being taught. And I think that remains probably our biggest challenge and explains a lot of why we are where we are today.
Well, why don't you take a moment, go ahead and wax eloquent. What did the communists do, especially, let's say, when it comes to killing their own people in the 20th century alone? Stalin, Mao, Fidel Castro. Wax eloquent.
Well, yeah. Well, it's hard to wax eloquent about something so brutal, right? But they killed at least 100 million people, and those are numbers according to the Harvard University Press book, The Black Book of Communism, which was published at the very end of the last century. And, you know, that still doesn't include deaths going on into this century, you know, China, North Korea, and in fact, that number, 100 million, is actually quite conservative. In fact, it includes about 20 to 25 million deaths in the Soviet Union, and we know that those numbers had to have been higher than that. In fact, Alexander Yakovlev, who was Mikhail Gorbachev, one of his closest advisors, top reformers, he did a book, early 2000s, Yale University Press, called A Century of Violence in Soviet Russia, and he said there that, quote, Stalin alone annihilated 60 to 70 million people,
what?
Unquote. And yeah, Stalin alone. And Solzhenitsyn used numbers like 60 to 70 million. The Black Book says it's like 62, 65 million dead in China. The latest numbers that we have from different biographers of Mao is that Mao might have killed over 70 million. So you might have 130, 140 million dead just through Mao's China and Stalin's Soviet Union, you know, just through those two combined. And, you know, to put this in perspective, about 10 million people were killed in World War I. You know, 50, 60 million people were killed in World War II. So it's hard to find. You got to go to the levels of disease and plagues, cancer, right, before you can find death tolls like this. It's this uniquely deadly, and I would say also diabolical ideology.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned the word diabolical, because I should plug your book, The Devil and Karl Marx, because in effect, what Karl Marx did in the 1800s is it's almost like he called on the demons or something, and Satan himself, come on earth and as he unleashed his theory and so forth. But as people put Karl Marx and his colleagues' writings in practice, Friedrich Engels, the Communist Manifesto, and other writings, they did in effect unleash hell on earth.
Yeah, they truly did. And in fact, as I went through in my biography of Marx, The Devil and Karl Marx, Marx had this strange fascination with the devil. He wrote poetry about the devil. I mean, the man has some really chilling lines. One of them is off the top of my head. Let's see. Thus heaven I've forfeited, I know it full well. My soul, once true to God, is chosen for hell.
Wow.
Look at this sword, this blood-dark sword, stabbing unerringly within thy soul. Where did I get this sword? The Prince of Darkness sold it to me. So he had this weird fascination with dark world, with Satan of all people. Marx had this favorite line from Goethe's Faust, the Mephistopheles character: everything that exists deserves to perish. Everything that exists deserves to perish. He had this very nihilistic, destructive, dark side. Marx wanted to burn down the house. And so from this man with these very destructive visions came this very destructive ideology that killed tens of millions, if not over 100 million people.
Now, some people want to say that, okay, in Russia, Lenin got it all right, but then a stroke, waylaid him, and then Stalin took over the revolution and got it all wrong. But your research seems to indicate that's not true at all. It was bad from the beginning.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, they used to call that the good Lenin, bad Stalin myth, right? That if only Lenin had lived, everything would have been okay. But Lenin is the one that put together the gulag, right? He assembled the totalitarian state. The banning of freedom of speech, religion, press, assembly, one-party dictatorship. Lenin created the totalitarian state that Stalin walked into. And also, I mean, frankly, you can find more vitriolic, hateful lines ordering the execution of people from the lines of the writings of Lenin than you can from Stalin. I mean, there's statements from Lenin is saying things like, hang so that everybody will see, no fewer than 1,000 known kulaks, rich men, bloodsuckers, vampires, leeches, parasites. So for hundreds of miles around, they will tremble. They will say they are strangling the blood-sucking kulaks. Yours, Lenin. Lenin was this hateful, vicious, nasty man who in many respects was actually worse than Stalin. And of course, it wasn't just Lenin and Stalin. It was Mao. It was Pol Pot. Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, the current Kim, all three of the Kims, Fidel Castro. Everywhere that this ideology has been tried, it's led to mass execution and death.
How about a contrast to the founding fathers of America, who today are vilified? They're more vilified than Stalin is or Lenin, let's say, on the college campuses.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so people want to complain about Washington and Jefferson owning slaves, but at the same time won't tell us about this racist side of Karl Marx, right? Or the racist side of somebody like Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. And oftentimes, too, in this kind of, you know, New York Times 1619 project of telling history, I mean, look, yeah, I teach at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. I've been here since 1997. Every semester, you know, when I lectured on Washington and Jefferson, I told my students exactly how many slaves they had. But I also quoted those men on how they condemned slavery, how they thought it was wrong, how they thought it was evil. And then we walk through the kind of, you know, the process of, well, why did they allow slavery? Why didn't they ban it? Well, good question, right? Their conscience was torn over it. They said they wanted to ban it, but they didn't know how they could make it happen. They didn't know how they could personally extricate themselves from it. So these men were very conflicted. The full story on what they did is actually much more complicated. But a lot of times in our educational system, people aren't willing to go through it carefully, walk through it carefully, you know, go through all the different nuance. And at the same time, again, they won't talk about the ugly dark side of people like Karl Marx, Lenin, Margaret Sanger. So it's a real double standard in that respect.
All right. Can you speak closer to your phone there? Would you explain what communism is and what is socialism and how do the two how do they overlap and how are they different?
Well, so Marx and Engels defined communism very simply in the Communist Manifesto. They said the entire communist theory or program may be summed up in the single sentence, abolition of private property. So for them, it was all about abolishing private property, but not just private property, right? Private property, capital, right of inheritance. The communists end up abolishing religion, speech, assembly, on and on and on. And really kind of the difference between communism and socialism, Marx and Engels said that socialism is the final transitionary step to communism. So history would pass through this series of dialectic stages from feudalism, from slavery and feudalism to capitalism to socialism to communism. So according to the communists themselves, socialism would be simply the final step toward communism. And by the way, democratic socialism, Marx, Lenin, even Engels, all of these guys, Mao, they all talked about democracy. They all favored democracy. But as Lenin put it, what does democracy mean? It means equality. For them, it was economic equality, economic democracy. So they all talked about democracy, democracy, democracy too. But for them, democracy was this temporary means to an end. And the end, the ultimate end, was this, this classless, redistributionist, collectivist utopia where private property and all these other basic foundational sacred and natural and even biblical rights were extinguished, abolished.
Okay, we have about 1 minute left. When you're saying all these things, I can't help but think of America's left today.
Yeah, well, America's left, they too talk about democracy. I talk about democratic socialism. You know, here we are
equity.
In the U.S. Congress, probably the most popular congresswoman in the U.S. Congress is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is a member of the Democratic Socialist of America, along with Ilhan Omar, Cori Bush, Rashida Tlaib, Bernie Sanders, who came in second in 2016 and 2020 for the Democratic nomination for the presidency, is a lifelong socialist. So it's a really scary thing that the party of JFK and Harry Truman is now moving increasingly toward this democratic socialism. And I would say even worse, if we could do another show on this, a really unhinged cultural radicalism that would make the cultural revolutionaries of the 60s would shock even them.
That I think that would be definitely worth exploring. Your website at Grove City College, I believe, is faithandfreedom.org. Is that right?
Faithandfreedom.com.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
All right.
That's okay. Yep. And you can find my articles at the American Spectator, which is spectator.org.
Spectator.org. Paul Kanger, always a pleasure. Keep up the great work.
All right. Thanks, Jerry. Take care.